And so while we continue with kind of the more traditional economic activities, such as attracting businesses, retaining businesses, we're doing more of the getting into the mix and trying to figure out what the problems are and then trying to solve those problems.
Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat, a podcast about today's biggest business issues told from a Chicagoland perspective. Hey, Chicagoland. Welcome to the DuPage Business Beat. I'm Greg Bedloff, President and CEO of Choose DuPage and your host for today's podcast. Today, we're talking about adaptation. Specifically, we're looking at how communities right here in DuPage are adapting to new trends by rethinking, reusing, and repurposing properties and buildings. To help me unpack this, I've invited a pair of guests who work on the front lines of the community development world. I'm joined here in the studio today by Sean Gasqueen, Director of Community and Economic Development at the Village of Bloomingdale, and Stacy Springer, Community Development Director from the City of Wooddale. Stacy, Sean, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And we're tickled to death to have you. And as we discussed, we want to have a conversation about economic development and community development and dig into what's happening in Bloomingdale and Wooddale, how you both are adapting to the changing economic environment with a focus on real estate trends. But before I get into that, let's talk about community development and economic development. Stacy, I'll start with you. For folks who don't work in community development, what's a community development director do for a local municipality? What's your day-to-day operations look like?
So in community development departments, you're generally responsible for supervising and overseeing the city's planning functions, and that can include long-range planning, economic development, reviewing current developments, processing building permits, and they mainly handle zoning, annexations, legal agreements, that type of thing. The other part of our main part of what we do is processing of building permits and building permit applications, making sure that anything that's built in the community will comply with the local safety codes and building codes and zoning codes, and then obviously issuing those permits and also following up with inspections to make sure everything is built according to plan.
And even though your title is Community Development Director, you have economic development responsibilities as well.
Yes, actually, a large part of my role is being the main economic development person for the city. We have two planners that also work for us, but they really focus on more of the day-to-day planning operations. And so I am doing those things like business attraction, business retention, but I'm also doing other things that are creative, trying to get development to happen in Wooddale.
Well, and Sean, you do community and economic development, as your title indicates,
correct,
for the Village of Bloomingdale. And how are things set up in Bloomingdale? Identical to Wooddale, or are you guys doing things a little different?
I wouldn't say identical, but generally speaking, yeah, I think Stacy did a great job of touching on what we do in our field. I think a big part of what I have to do as well, we're structured slightly different than Wooddale is. So part of my role, in addition to what Stacy just touched on, is to help facilitate processes for a lot of the developers. So, you know, taking them through the Planning and Zoning Commission, getting them through the Village Board, and acting as that facilitator to be able to get them through that process and help them to get there. And that kind of feeds into not only the community development aspect, but also the economic development aspect.
And Sean, as a follow-up to that, you mentioned Village Board. How integral is the Village Board, and specifically the mayor, in each one of your towns in terms of economic development opportunities, community development opportunities, the process, the time, the relationships? What roles do they play?
For me, it's absolutely critical. Franco is probably he is the most involved mayor that I've ever worked with, in a positive effect. And he really provides the direction that we need and makes the connections that we need to have in order to get some of these businesses in. And then they are our board as a whole are super facilitative in terms of getting, you know, getting petitioners through the process. I like to feel like we are very pro-business. Our board likes to feel that we are very pro-business, and we're very strong on helping petitioners to facilitate that. If we can find a good user and it's a positive impact on the village, they generally, at least as far as I'm concerned, I feel like they have a positive experience when they come through our board.
Stacy, same question for you with maybe a little twist, because I would imagine that it's largely the same. Are there additional layers between you guys and the ones who strike the gavel and ultimately take the final vote?
Sure. That's a big question. But similar to Sean, our mayor and our city council are very pro-business, very welcoming, and want to present a nice, smooth process for development approvals. And so they set the policy, and we bring projects to them, but we generally know what they're interested in, and we make sure that when we bring those to them, we've got all of the answers and have vetted them through the codes. And they're very supportive of the staff and have been very supportive of new businesses that need help to relocate to Wooddale or start up in Wooddale.
Well, I know I can say, as someone who has worked in the same ecosystem as you guys for the last 20 years or so, when opportunities come through Choose DuPage to either one of your communities, I can attest to that your mayors and your community development people and anybody who needs to be involved is always there. And we all know that developers and consultants and site selectors, everybody wants everything yesterday. And we all know that everybody wants to hear yes. And everybody wants all hurdles and, well, that doesn't make any sense. Well, why do you do that? We know that there is legal precedent behind it. We know that there's transparency. We know that there's good process behind it. How do you deal with those folks who every now and again will come in and say, I submitted my permit 2 days ago, or I submitted my initial development plans a week ago, and I got a builder ready to go, and I'm waiting on you?
We generally will have, before anybody submits to any of the formal process of our entitlement process, we will sit down at least once. A lot of times I would have an expectation of two or three times with preliminary plans, because to Stacy's earlier point, part of our job, and I think this carries for most communities, is to vet that process. And I mean, we've been doing this a long time, so we have a pretty good working knowledge in terms of what our boards expect, what our commissions expect. And so back to, my earlier statement about time is money, I think a lot of the developers, at least from my experience, that we deal with understand that part of what we're charged with doing is I always tell people that I can't provide them with an outcome, but I need to. We basically need to provide them with the best direction possible. So that's how I deal with that, is to be able to provide them with a timeline and right up front be able to tell them this is what you can expect. A lot of this, as we both experience, are driven by state statute, where you have notification requirements, where you have legal requirements for all the things that you have to do. So there's no way around that. But when it comes to what we are able to do, as long as it's within our legal authority, we do everything that we can to expedite process and to do that.
So that was a great answer. We do generally the same thing as Sean mentioned. But Greg, it sounds like you have some insight into the challenges that local government officials are faced with on a daily basis. And we do hear that. And one of the things that we do, similar to what Sean does, is try to make everything crystal clear up front. These are the expectations. Here are checklists of what you need to do. Here's the time frame that we can complete these things in, and allow for the back and forth time of resubmittals so we can get everything in compliance with the codes. And then when there is an emergency situation, we try to help people as much as we can. I mean, obviously, there's limitations. We need to take everybody in the order that they applied. But sometimes there's something where we can go out of our way to help an applicant either fill out an application or point them exactly to something by giving them an example of what we're looking for. Yeah. And so we always try, all of us try and be very helpful to those that we're working with.
Well, as you mentioned, I get involved in these opportunities not only at the local level, and I have recent experience, Sean, with you in Bloomingdale, but also at the county level and the state level, and not the federal level yet, but certainly the state level. And I think those pre-development meetings are just absolutely critical. So let's get into your towns, and let's get into what's happening, and let's get into the overall environment in DuPage and the region. in terms of economic development and opportunities. And one thing we're hearing in the news over and over again, it's happening really loud down in Chicago right now with the LaSalle Street TIF district and what used to be the financial corridor of the city of Chicago. And those buildings are now becoming condos and or apartment buildings. Adaptive reuse, which is, in my humble opinion, very fair and very forward thinking because the economy is changing. And I respectfully submit that COVID really accelerated what was already happening, right? There was already hybrid work. There was already remote work, but COVID certainly accelerated it. And I do some public speaking. And if you've heard me, I've said in the past that when we think of DuPage County circa 1980s, 1990s, a lot of land west of Chicago, a lot of room for office buildings, a lot of accounting firms, a lot of law firms, a lot of professional services that could come into those buildings, sit back, let it happen. Well, it's no secret that those buildings are nowhere near as occupied as they were in the past. We've seen what's happened with brick and mortar retail. Sean, I know you're gonna talk about that.
Absolutely.
So how do we, or what are your communities doing in light of what's happening at a macro level from an economic perspective and applying it to either Bloomingdale or Wooddale? Sean, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, most people are aware of what's happening over at Stratford Square Mall. That's the low-hanging fruit, I guess, for us in terms of the conversation. Most people will look at adaptive reuse as reuse of existing buildings. We're blessed in Bloomingdale to have the opportunity for not only adaptive reuse of buildings, but also of property as well with everything that we're doing over at Stratford. So in total, the mall area, 225 acres. We've got, I don't want to minimize the other things going on in town, but our main focus, my main focus at least for the last year or so has obviously been Stratford Square. So, and a lot of that credit, and I'm not just saying this because I work for him, but a lot of that credit is the mayor and
Sean,
our village board.
When I followed the happenings when it started to where it's at now, I mean, what a tip of the hat to your mayor, your village
100%.
Council, and yourself
to
get the support of the community to acquire a mall for reuse for hopefully, and I'm certain it will be, the benefit of Bloomingdale as a whole. Did you guys run into, what are you doing? You don't belong in this business. Why are you acquiring dirt? What are you going to do with it?
Initially, there was a little bit of that, and I think there's still some residual, feelings, in the community of that. But I think by and large, the mayor and the board have done a fantastic job of being very transparent and being, Mayor Franco has been nothing but transparent with our community. He's very, very strong into the social media things, gets the word out on Facebook and everything else to his credit. And a lot of our residents are appreciative of that. He makes sure that if anything is happening from anywhere from the demolition to, we try to get things out about, dust control and things of that sort, all the way down to the micro level, all the way up to what the plan is.
So what is the plan? What are we looking at? What's coming?
So the mayor.
What's contemplated? I won't back you into that big of a corner. But what are some of the options?
I think he unleashed a plan about, I'm trying to remember how long ago that was. Probably about 4 or 5 months ago. Now we had standing room only over at our golf course for the unveiling of the plan for that. Which of course, as anybody in our field knows, can change a dozen times before anything actually comes to fruition. But the general concept of what's going on over there really hasn't changed. I think, everybody in the mayor, again, being fully transparent, has acknowledged to everybody that, the expectation is that area is going to be heavy in entertainment, commercial, restaurant, things of that sort, that the items that are going to generate revenue and sales tax for the village.
And where the economy's going, right?
That's exactly right. Where we're seeing things kind of move to. I think that everybody's willing to acknowledge that there will obviously be, and we've had conversations with, some multifamily residential development that's over there to feed into, some of the businesses and the things that we're doing there. Once it goes back to, you can't put 225 acres of retail and expect that to survive on its own, because you're just not going to attract. You need daytime, same way you need commercial, you need restaurants, you need those types of uses that generate retail. You need those service-related uses that are going to be your Monday through Friday, users of those places. You can't rely on the weekend to do that, and most of us, understand that.
And Stacey, and no big mall in Wooddale.
No, but that sounds like a really exciting project. Yeah. I'd love to work on that.
Sean's knee deep in that. I can assure you of that. But a lot of things changing in Wooddale. And,
sure.
And a lot of different economic tailwinds and headwinds. We'll touch a little bit, I hope, on some of the transportation infrastructure, i.e. Western Access, that is going to have a large say, not only in Bloomingdale, but I think it's safe to say probably more in Wooddale because it's right in that corridor. And I know you had some professional experience in that. So enlighten me a little bit about adaptive reuse and changing markets and where you're seeing growth and where you're seeing contraction in the Wooddale world.
Sure. I think Sean knows this as well. It's been challenging to get redevelopment over the last several years. You mentioned kind of the shift from brick and mortar stores to everybody's buying things online. So that whole environment is changing. COVID obviously changed everything. And then increase in interest rates, increase in material costs. It's been really challenging to get development to happen. And so while we continue with kind of the more traditional economic activities, such as attracting businesses, retaining businesses, we're doing more of the getting into the mix and trying to figure out what the problems are and then trying to solve those problems. So why isn't property getting redeveloped? Well, because probably there's assembly costs, and that takes a lot of time and investment. There's demolition costs, and there's processing time in order to get something rezoned. So the city of Wooddale has been taking a very creative approach to buy properties, purchase properties that we see are ripe for redevelopment, but maybe looked at as challenging from a developer's perspective. So we would go and buy multiple properties, usually multiple, although some larger single properties. We would have the property rezoned if necessary. We would demolish the structures on that property and also then maybe list it for sale or make it very well aware that to the business community that those properties are available for redevelopment. And we've had a lot of success with that approach. For example, we were able to attract a 150-unit apartment building on property that had been a vacant bank, for years. And we did have some stumbles with that because, again, of COVID and interest rates, material costs. The developers that had gotten prior approvals for that weren't able to move forward because of a variety of those situations. And so, in problem solving for that, I reached out to a lot of apartment developers that had done projects in other suburban communities in Chicagoland and said, hey, we have these approved plans. Any of you interested in coming in here and building this project? And I got 7 builders interested, and we ultimately did move forward with one of those. And they did remodel the building more to suit their needs and kind of the project that they would normally build, their model. But we got through the redevelopment agreement. We got through zoning entitlements very quickly. It's one thing that I think Wooddale is very good at is getting things, projects through the process very efficiently and quickly, much, much quicker than any of the other communities I've worked in.
Do you look at that as an incentive for that developer, the fact that you acquired the land, you assembled the land? I mean, so much chatter in our world these days about it's tough to develop with these interest rates being so high.
And, exactly.
And we love our development community, full disclosure. Again, we want to make sure that they get everything they need, and we recognize and we embrace that we want them to make money. We get that. We know they can't be developers if they don't make money. But I always have to just kind of do that little pause and think, did anybody really think 2.5% money was going to be around forever? And is 6% money such a terrible thing? I mean, you know, we're all old enough. This always is followed by, when I bought my first house, the interest rate was 12%. Are you starting to see, now that interest rates look like they're stabilizing, are you starting to see in either one of your communities developers saying, okay, we've kind of hit our comfort zone, so to speak. It's a little more predictable and we're getting back in the game?
I think you just hit the nail on the head with the term predictable. I mean, I think that that's what a lot of our developers anyways are realizing. To your point, I think that a lot of people shied away from, I mean, when you get a taste of 2.5% interest on something, it's hard to, you know.
I wish I had a mortgage, but I don't.
it's hard to swallow that 6%. But as you start to see that that's going to become the norm, I think that more developers get a little bit more confident. And we're starting to see a lot more activity in people that are more comfortable with following through with development that they may have put on hold initially, even if, you know, it didn't start with conversations that we were having. If it was just a thought in their head that, hey, maybe we should approach Bloomingdale about this property or that property, and it never happened. I think we're seeing more people, you know, the phone starting to ring and people starting to come in for these pre-development meetings just to kind of understand, you know, what their options are. So I think that's the long answer, but I think the short answer is yes. I think people are, at least from my experience, people are becoming more comfortable with, you know, with status quo in terms of the interest rate.
In order to answer your question, please, a little bit of a follow-up from Sean, but developers have expressed interest in what we're doing to reposition these properties to make it easier for them to develop. I've gone as far as preparing plats of survey, preparing plats of vacation for adjoining alleys. And we also use other incentives like TIF or other things like sales tax rebates, if that's appropriate. And they do appreciate the time they save because they don't have to go through the rezoning that we might have already taken advantage of. And so I've seen those properties that we've repositioned, I'll call it, getting a lot more interest. We have commercial developers interested in both of those properties, and we have a restaurant that's building a new restaurant on one of those properties. And like both you and Sean mentioned, they are also looking at the predictability of the future, and we're starting to see more developers become interested in moving forward on projects that have been stalled.
Yeah, I've always said that any hard dollar incentives for a development that is kind of worthwhile, aligned with your strategic plan, it's a rounding error on the balance sheet of the developer. But time is money, and getting all of the work done on the front end so the business can do what it wants to do first and foremost, open and make money.
Mm-hmm. And that's just it. I mean, a lot of the developers that we deal with, some of the larger developers may have staff that deal specifically with entitlement process, but most of them do not. So their main goal is, just like you said, it's to get open and start making money. They don't know how to do the process. So if we as planning professionals can help to facilitate that process and show them how that process can move smoothly and how we can get them there, that, you know, they, a lot more developers are starting to realize that, you know, that is, in fact, that time savings is a cost savings to them.
So let's dive a little deeper into this topic with kind of the $64,000 question. I get phone calls on a weekly basis from building owners, developers, equity partners. They want to tear down office buildings to build distribution, warehouse, logistics, data centers, multifamily, quite frankly, anything but office, where the office currently sits. And how do you handle those calls when, okay, you've assembled something, or okay, you've done a little of the legwork on the front end, but what if I want to tear this building down and I want to put in something that is not currently entitled from a zoning perspective?
Yeah, I mean, I think I think you're going to probably get two very different answers out of Stacy and I, because
that's okay.
You know, we are very much a retail oriented community. So, you know, Bloomingdale doesn't have a tremendous amount of acreage or a tremendous amount of square foot available for a lot of those uses. Of course, You know, we've had interest from parties that have come forward for the mall property. And clearly that's a little bit easier for us to, you know, to take on that, given the location of the mall and where it sits and everything else that, unfortunately for us in our situation, warehousing and Amazon fulfillment centers and things of that sort just aren't, you know, quite frankly, the highest and best use for, you know, where this mall is located.
You guys are potentially prepared to pull off something really cool because you have kind of already a downtown Bloomingdale, right? You have that old section. I think you, what do you call it? Old Town?
Old Town, yes.
You have Old Town.
Yes.
Where you have a little city center and you have your version of Main Street.
Yes.
And now you're potentially creating another city center and another urban center for your residents. And as I was preparing for today's podcast, I was going through my head of the towns in the area who could say, yeah, we have our old organic downtown
right. That
kind of grew up on Main Street, Bloomingdale. And now we're creating this other park and gazebo and restaurants and everything else. Man, if you can pull it off, it's going to be a model that could be looked at throughout the country.
I certainly hope so, because like I said, our board and the mayor have just been phenomenal in terms of their foresight and the things that they've done with all that. And I always joke with people and tell them that, you know, our old town is kind of just a taste of what they can expect out at the mall.
You could have like vintage Bloomingdale and modern Bloomingdale.
Yes.
All with the same kind of feel and flavor. Sorry, Stacy, same kind of questions for Wooddale. Are you seeing the whole I want to tear a building down mantra?
Yes, we are. For example, where Bloomingdale has a lot more commercial, Wooddale has probably almost 40% of its land area in industrial parks and business parks.
And good for you, because manufacturing and industrial is the backbone of our country, and light manufacturing. Please continue.
Developers have been interested in the industrial property in Wooddale, and since we're limited in the space that we have, they approached us about property on our side of the boundary line with the village of Bensonville and said, hey, here's some property. It's about 68 acres. We'd love to annex it. And right now it's zoned something different in the county. How would Wooddale feel about bringing this type of business to your city? And this was the perfect site for industrial buildings because it was surrounded on almost four sides with other industrial property. And so it was perfect for that. And the developer offered to bring potentially a data center. There was a data center interested in this property. And from our perspective, that's industrial. It's the perfect industrial use because they have low employees. So in a building that's about 280,000 square feet of data centers, they may have 25 to the max of 50 people that come to the building daily. Also, once they're constructed, they have very little truck traffic. So not like manufacturing or logistics where there's a lot of truck traffic being brought to the area. So they're very low impact, but they're high value, obviously, for communities because utility taxes, all the electricity that they use, and also sometimes water for cooling and property taxes. Mm-hmm. And so they're very beneficial from a community standpoint. And I know lots of communities in Chicagoland area are looking to attract to these types of uses for those reasons.
And we all know that the challenges associated with data centers is electrical capacity nearby and running the conduit and everything else. And has the old Elgin O'Hare Expressway, which went to neither Elgin nor O'Hare, has the completion of Elgin O'Hare through that corridor impacted this flight to industrial and distribution?
So 390 has really opened up the city for additional interest in industrial because we are, as the crow flies, less than a mile from O'Hare. But once this last section is built, the west entrance into O'Hare, we think we're going to get even a lot more interest. And the electrical grid, as you mentioned, ComEd, in this area has been attractive for data centers, but you've got to locate them in just the right area.
Yeah.
And so for our project, ComEd is actually building a substation, and that will serve the ultimate 1.5 million square feet of data centers that we expect to have in the community in six different buildings. But communities around us are also kind of excited about the substation being built because this gives them the opportunity to further east attract data centers to their community.
Yeah, no question. It's going to be catalytic, and it's one is going to feed another. But now back to Wooddale to follow up on that question, Stacey. Where does multifamily and or kind of attainable housing, workforce housing, affordable housing, whatever moniker you want to give it, where does that fit into the mix of redevelopment and adaptive reuse?
Oh, sure. So Wooddale is fortunate, actually, to have that type of workforce in our community. We have some multifamily that's been around for quite some time. It is more affordable. And one of the things that we were missing were more of the higher end apartments, the luxury apartments. And so that was another project that where I mentioned the city was able to purchase some property, reposition it for development. And we have a successful project that is going to break ground in September for 150 luxury apartments. But housing is a consideration because they need the labor force. And I have talked to some of our new businesses that have come into our business parks, and they are doing fairly well in finding those employees that they need in the local area.
Good. What about housing issues in Bloomingdale, Sean?
I think we're pretty fortunate to the extent that we've got a good mix of the different varieties of housing, everything from affordable housing with some of the apartments in our town. We do have a considerable stock of townhomes as well. So, you know, and then we obviously move up into single family and mm-hmm. we too are looking at a lot of the luxury apartment components and everything else.
So, Sean, you told us what occupies the majority of your day.
Yes.
And the hours in your day of them all. Mm-hmm. And Stacey, we know that your world is a little more diverse right now, but what is kind of Wooddale's focus? What are you really kind of got the laser on these days in terms of the Village of Wooddale?
Well, this is the fun part of my job, the economic development part. We, of course, are doing a master plan for a community park that will be in our civic area downtown. Mm-hmm. That's a fun project. We're updating building codes. We're processing long-range visions and strategic plans. But the fun part of my job is working on economic development. And so a lot of these properties that I've mentioned that we have picked up, it's getting them to the point where they're more attractive to developers and then getting the word out and working with developers to submit proposals. It's fun because I just got a proposal for one of the pieces of land that we purchased. I just finished for the city buying another piece of land and assembling the two together. And now all of a sudden we have a proposal for a great project. Wooddale is unique because we have really the industrial business parks on the north side of the community. And then we have two main arterial roads that go through the community that really are where our retail and our business is concentrated, and the neighborhoods are outside of that. So the properties that we're focusing on are on that main arterial corridor, mm-hmm. and our community, our residents love to see things happen on those commercial corridors because it brings them new opportunities of stores to visit, mm-hmm. services that they can handle in town rather than going to adjoining communities.
All right. So speed round / lightning round / wrap up. Give me a real challenge that you're concerned about as we move forward in this current environment that, you know, doesn't keep you awake at night, but maybe is something that you're keeping your eyes on because it could undo all the good work that we're all trying to do without being super political.
Well, I would have to go back to the change in the retail environment. We are losing brick and mortar retail left and right. I am seeing businesses leave shopping centers and vacancies are increasing. So obviously, we need to be creative in our roles and trying to fill that space or repurpose that space. But the other thing that we all, I think, face some challenge with is reinvesting in the existing properties that are already in the community, encouraging property owners to make improvements and maintain their properties so they're attractive for future tenants. And so the municipalities generally have some sort of incentive programs to assist with that. Wooddale, we just updated our facade improvement program to be very attractive to businesses. We lowered the minimum cost that it is to even participate in the program. We've also allowed people to get reimbursement for up to 50% of their project,
wow,
up to $200,000.
Wow.
And so we are trying to entice owners to make those improvements to their property and maintain them so that we can continue to attract new businesses to our community.
John, same question.
Yeah, I mean—
Headwind.
Yeah, it's— keeping the businesses that we currently have in place and filling those vacancies that we have. But, you know, I have the good fortune of being able to be very specific while being very general in that, for me, it's maintaining the timeline over at Stratford Square. I mean, that's a large enough project and a time span that's going to stretch a good amount. And it's moving very quickly, if you know, regardless of what—
Is this your way of saying it's either going to be your gold medal or your swan song?
I'm confident. I'm absolutely confident it'll be a gold medal. It's just, it's one of those things where,
yeah,
you know,
I am too.
There's a lot of balls in the air, and there's a lot of timelines that need to be met that you know we're charged with, and keeping those timelines to make sure that, you know, this is a grand— I mean, this is basically the grand project in the scheme of things. I mean, you can get a single family building, you can get a commercial building, and you worry about, you know, electric permits and plumbing permits and everything else. Now we're dealing with that times 100, and trying to make that work. Trying to get those businesses in there, and then trying to coordinate all of those items, you know, as each independent user comes in, and none of that can happen, and we can't have that conversation with those businesses, with those tenants, until we get in our infrastructure, yeah, until we get everything else done, and we work with the utilities and get what we need out from the existing mall and get in what we need for our future uses. So that's going to be a constant challenge and a constant battle for us moving forward. I think it'll go, you know, with the support of our board and the support of the mayor. I think, you know, we've got a very good chapter ahead of us, but it has its day-to-day challenges.
What are we looking at and are super excited to kind of see coming down the pike? I'll start at the county level. I'll start at the kind of the regional level. I've never seen the level of coordination in the ecosystem from the local economic development folks to the county to the state.
So for us, in our proximity to 390 and that western access to O'Hare, that's going to be a game changer for us. I think that is going to open up our community to more investment and interest from a variety of different users that we may not have had if that didn't happen.
Sean? I got a feeling your tailwind's going to be the same as your headwind.
Yeah, it absolutely is. And I said, I hate to sound like a broken record, but it's Stratford. I mean, if this was just any, you know, your everyday typical development, my answer would probably be different. But this, you know, the vision that we have and the vision that the board and the mayor have for this project is such to where this is going to be a regional attraction. And it's going to draw from much further than, you know, anything that we currently have in the village, or at least that's the hope. And, you know, once that happens, not only will we see a huge interest and a huge influx, hopefully from a lot of our surrounding communities and the residents of those communities, but interest from businesses as well.
As we talked about before we went live on our podcast here, we're going to start doing this for every municipality in DuPage County.
Excellent.
You two were the first ones, and you have set a very high bar for everybody else to try to reach. I really, truly enjoyed the conversation. And last but not least, thank you.
Well, thank you for having us. This was a very great opportunity to chat with you. I really enjoyed the back and forth and the banter, and I learned a lot from Sean.
I agree. I share her and her sentiments. I mean, and thank you to Choose DuPage, because we've, as Greg, as you know, we've had a very long-standing relationship with you guys. Yeah, it's I wish everybody that comes after us the best of luck with everything
that
they
do. Yeah, this is very fun.
Yes,
good.
Agreed.
So last question, Stacy and Sean, how does somebody get in touch with you if they want to learn more about the opportunities and the economic development landscape, either in the city of Wooddale or the village of Bloomingdale?
So I think Sean and I will both say the best way to get a hold of us or find out more information about our communities is our community website. Ours is www.wooddale.com. And you can go to the community development page, and my phone number and email address is right there. But if you have a pen and paper, you can write it down. My direct line is 630-787-3737. And my email address is sspringer@wooddale.com.
And for the Village of Bloomingdale, you can, like Stacy indicated, you can reach out on our website. All of my contact information is available. Phone number 630-671-5694 in order to get a hold of me specifically. Otherwise, if there's anybody out there that's just interested in following what's happening either at Stratford Square or anywhere else in the village, we are very strong into the social medias.
So that's it for today's show. Again, Sean and Stacy, thank you again so much for joining me. And as always, thank you to the College of DuPage for supporting today's episode. To keep up with what's happening in DuPage County and the Chicagoland region, follow Choose DuPage on social media or visit choosedupage.com. I'm Greg Bedlove. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on the DuPage Business Beat.